If you think we're on the run.
Yes, it's another episode of the Dad's Army podcast. This time around, you've got a commentary on The Test, a really interesting and very well-regarded Season 4 episode. But just before we get into that, I want to have a quick conversation with none other than Oliver. Hello. You thought it was going to be someone else there, didn't you? Hello, Oliver. How are you?
Hello, James. I'm fine. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. We want to just have a quick conversation, not necessarily explicitly about Dad's Army this time, but given that Oliver is an independent filmmaker and he's been back behind the camera or behind the editing suite, or what is it you do as producer?
Well, on these two latest projects, I mean, I love working with Frank Williams, and I was in a position to enter a 48-hour short film competition last year.
Well, that meant you had to put together a film inside of 2 days.
Yeah, we got a mystery word announced to us on a Friday afternoon, and then we had the Saturday to film it, the Sunday to edit it, the Monday morning we hand it in.
Wow.
And the word was light. So you just had to feature light somehow, either as a word or as a theme or any way you could do it. And that'd be 3 minutes and you had 48 hours to do it.
And you managed to assemble a cast, including a former Dad's Army actor.
Yeah.
And a couple of others.
I do a website for Bernard Holly, who's an established character actor of more than 40 years, and he was a regular in Z-Cars. And so I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to bring back Z-Cars for 3 minutes? And so we have Bernard's character, Bill Newcombe, now retired, falling asleep in his garden and dreaming back to an old case where he has to go around and stop an old couple having what sounds like a very heated, awful argument, but it turns out to be quite a funny setup, which featured Frank and a lovely actress called Jean Marlowe. And here's a short clip.
No, don't you do, you stupid woman! You've got it all wrong again!
Don't you speak to me like that. I've had enough of it.
Can you open the door, please? This is the police.
Oh, dear, here we go. It'll be that snivelling, sneaky little so-and-so next door.
That's your fault, because you are too loud!
My goodness, didn't that vicar sound stroppy once again?
Yeah, Frank was in proper vicar mode. It was great. And Bernard Holly was amazed how much energy Frank has. Because he's 80 this year, Frank. Mm. But he was on top form, and Frank was coming out with extra gags that we couldn't possibly fit in 5 minutes, let alone three. It was really, really good fun.
Something that I've only just seen today, all the way through for the first time, was another film focusing on something that is often overlooked, certainly within Dad's Army fandom circles, and that's the 1975 stage play. And you've really managed to pull out some new material there in an exceptionally informative short film, which we need to say you can see on YouTube.
You can indeed. Mervyn Cumming, the director I've worked with a lot, Mervyn and I sat down with Frank, and we chatted to Frank about his experience working with Dad's Army stage show. You can watch the interview as a whole on YouTube. Frank has his own YouTube page. It's youtube.com/FrankWilliamsTV. So you can check out, I think it's 8.5 minute interview, recalling his experience of taking Dad's Army to stage. It's called Warmington on Stage, the documentary, and the Z-Cars thing's on there as well. But have a listen, maybe you haven't heard some of these stories before.
Mm. No, it's fantastic stuff, really good material. It's the first new material that I've seen about any era of Dad's Army that draws out new and informative stuff from people who are involved in it. And these are the kind of things that we should really have seen as extras on the DVDs releases that were released pretty much just as they were transmitted and had a very short documentary on. But go and have a look at it. It's youtube.com/FrankWilliamsTV.
Or I think if you even search Frank Williams Dad's Army or Frank Williams Vicar, then you'll come up with the documentary.
But do let us know what you think. Send in your thoughts to Oliver at oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com, and I'm sure you'll be very pleased to hear feedback from your listeners.
Certainly will. Yeah, no, it's going to be marvellous. Yeah, and you know, hopefully, I mean, I got to know Frank very well over the last few years, and so I'm always trying to catch up with him. So as well, if there's anything you'd ever want to ask Frank Williams, email us in, let us know, because, you know, you never know, we might be in a position to ask him that himself.
Okay, and without any further ado, I suppose we should get on with our main feature of this podcast, which is a commentary on the test, and it's the same thing as usual. In fact, it's such the same thing as usual, I'm sick of saying it. Oliver, you can say it this time.
Very shortly, you're going to hear a countdown. And once you hear 3, 2, 1, that's when you press play. And when you hear play, you press play. I said that twice. Very shortly, you're going to hear a countdown. It'll be a 3, 2, 1.
Three, two, one, play.
Hello and welcome to episode 57 of the Dad's Army podcast. And seeing as lately there's been a lot of cricket things with the Ashes going on and all that kind of stuff, we thought, well, there's only one episode we can really commentate on. That is, of course, Mum's Army. Only joking! It is the test. We're going to do a commentary of a test now. James and I here. I don't know when the last time you saw this was, but it's quite a while ago for me. I
haven't seen the episode, the TV version of it, for some time. I did try in vain and listen to the audio version, the radio version of this last night, but unfortunately it was so tired I fell asleep 5 minutes into it.
Oh, wow.
And that's not an indictment on the quality of this particular episode, no. But there was actually a reason. I think it's the only reason. It's the only time we've actually had a specific reason while we've chosen an episode, other than the fact that we want to choose an episode for a commentary.
Yeah.
And that's because England are apparently doing quite well in the Ashes. And this is the only real episode of Dad's Army that has got cricket in it of any kind, with the exception of a couple of throwaway references in Menace from the Deep, perhaps.
Yes.
I could see you just thinking of that in your mind as I was saying there were no other cricket references.
Well, you're right, Rockcliffe, he is a good bowler.
Well, do you know, whenever you do Manning impressions, I can't help but see Phil Maddock now. Which is terrible, I know. But anyway, you've got the book in front of you today. When was it broadcast and so on?
This episode went out on the 20th of November 1970, and it went out to 16 million viewers, which was the second highest episode viewing figures wise of the series, of series 4, only eclipsed by Mum's Army, which came in at 16.4 million. So, a very popular episode at the time. I mean, I suppose at the time, what we're talking about here in 1970, the only real inkling people would have before watching it would be the Radio Times listing.
Yeah, yeah,
and
pretty much.
Which, because at the time, you know, only, you know, two or three channels, the plot referenced in the Radio Times used to be a lot more in depth, so it probably gave quite an accurate account of the fact that it was a cricket episode, and also the fact that there would be a guest appearance by Mr. Freddie Truman.
Mm. I wonder if there was a little bit more publicity than usual surrounding this episode. Again, the only real way we'll find out is by receiving emails from new listeners, if you actually remember it, because I'm afraid, well, I'm not actually afraid, I'm quite pleased. This was before both Oliver and I were born,
yes.
So we don't know quite what it was like. But yeah, certainly the Radio Times was much more of an essential purchase for people who watch television than it is these days, where you can just find out what's on telly by looking on the internet, or indeed on your guide on the V Plus box, all inventions that would be quite alien to the characters in this episode. But I think certainly the appearance of Freddie Truman may have attracted some publicity, because he was a very well-known cricketer. I think it's important probably to mention, Oliver, that neither you or I are particular cricket fans at all.
No, my knowledge of the game, as good as it is very poor, to be quite honest. So,
as good as it is very poor. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes,
oh, as good as the game is, I should say, rather than my own.
Oh no, it's a terrible game. It's incredibly boring. And I do feel quite biased by it as well, because my father used to insist on having it on television for hours and hours on end, for what seemed like days on end, fall asleep, and then whenever I changed the channel to Knight Rider or something,
yeah,
it was, oh, I was watching that, and he wasn't, he was snoring to it. But we're digressing massively.
I like scenes between Marion Walker, because I think Walker was the best character. What I'm trying to say is Walker got quite unique reactions and a mannering, I think, you know, because he was always a rogue, but then he'd be, getting you a whiskey or whatever on the side and all that. I think the banter that the pair of them had is really good. As a hero, Walker's obviously just done a demon shot. And Mannering's now trying to give him advice. You know, it's a great example of his pomposity.
No, you're quite right. I think there's two things about what you just said I'd like to come back on. Certainly, I think despite Walker coming up with jokes, quips, one-liners where Mannering is always putting him down, when he's being straight and when he's not being funny, Mannering always takes him seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
And he feels somewhat uneasy, I think. Or Arthur Lowe's portrayal comes across that it's he feels a little bit uncomfortable dealing with Walker on a serious level. I know a couple of other individuals who, like Dad's Army, have said they feel Walker is the most intelligent character of the cast.
Most switched on.
Yeah, he may well be. And there was another point that I wanted to make here as well. And I was considering whether mentioning it now or at the end of the episode. But let's do it now. You watch this man in this episode. He does not make one good decision.
Right.
Every call or every statement that he makes is flawed. And he absolutely has an abject failure to accept that anyone around him knows better than him in a game of cricket. Clearly you've got Wilson, who has played cricket on a much more professional basis, on a club basis, as we find out, and he ignores everything.
He's most stubborn, one of his most stubborn, I see what you're saying.
He's incredibly stubborn, and he gets away with it, and you look at a couple of the glances, and I'll try and point them out as and when they come up, between the cast and the platoon, because they clearly are aware that Mannering is not making a great deal of sense here.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, it just highlights. If, let's say that you're a, manager of a company, right? You had a team of individual working for you, and you would choose episodes of Dad's Army to demonstrate different kinds of management styles or communication practices.
Yeah.
You could pick out episodes and examples of Mannering where the leadership and management is brilliant.
Absolutely.
Absolutely brilliant. This is one that you would choose to show how not to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he is a law unto himself and doesn't listen to anybody around him. I mean, look what he's just done to Paul Godfrey.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a little, just watching that then when Arthur walked away, he looks like he's really enjoying this episode. You know, I think he almost had a little smile on his face seeing how ridiculous Arthur really looked tracked down like that. But it's a good episode for Arvin, isn't it? As you quite rightly say, he's at his flawed best.
He's stupid boy. He certainly features prominently in this one. He's in almost every scene, I think.
Yeah.
And, well, I guess that's probably the case with most episodes, actually. But he's very, very present here. But it's quite rare that he just gets things so wrong, so consistently, all of the way through. All the way through the episodes.
But I mean, sports in terms of comedy is a great thing to feature. I mean, but only on an odd occasion like this. It obviously proved popular because that many people watched it. But sport is something everyone can relate to, and particularly games. You know, I mean, I think Dad's Army went. We know our onions when they go on and they have to try and get over the fence and the activities.
Mm.
Dad's Army, towards the end, I think, when it came to the general running around and doing a bit of slapstick, I think it lost its way a little. I think here it was really sharp because cricket's something anyone can relate to an extent. And also, it's timeless, like Dad's Army itself in the set, timeless.
But it's also very British.
Yes, yes.
Well, certainly the perception of what Britishness is, and along with, of course, the quintessential butcher in the high street, as we see James there. But, I think any programme gets away with it to a degree when they do something different but don't do it on a regular basis.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You
don't continue to look at ways to alter a successful format.
Yeah.
And the test, I think I'm right in saying, came about because Jimmy Perry and Bill Pertwee are absolutely massive cricket fans.
Right.
I'm not so sure about Arthur Lowe, in all honesty, but for some reason, the image I have of Buffalo and John Lemessy referring to that is that they would probably be cricket fans.
I think Lemessy likes it as well.
But perhaps that's the reason why. But if you think of any other examples of sports within Dad's Army, there's only one other episode where I can think of them playing football. And I know you're worried because I'm going to ask you what it is now.
Football?
Yeah, they had a game of football in one particular episode. To toughen their feet.
Is that an early episode?
I honestly don't know. That's one thing you're stronger than me at, is where in the run these episodes feature. It's Boots, Boots, Boots.
That's Series 2, I think. Is it?
That's
no.
Series 2's black and white, so no.
Oh, right. I'm wrong.
You got the book in front of
you. Oh, no.
It's... I can't remember. But Walker's in it, so it's either Series 6 or before. And here we are. We have Mr. Freddie Truman, who I don't believe was a prolific actor.
No. Although he holds his own, and he... I suppose if you're, you know, a sportsman, are used to the cameras at least. I mean, acting's a different act, art, you know. But, I mean, if you had, I suppose, nowadays, if you had, who's a popular English cricketer nowadays? Who's our chap, Freddie?
No, Johnny Wilkinson.
That's rugby.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, not him then.
No, this is how good we are, Pete.
Stephen Hendry.
All right, let's say a snooker player, then. If you had Stephen Hendry in a sitcom, if you had Stephen Hendry pop up in My Family Now, I'm pretty sure about the acting wouldn't be all that. Although Steve Davis just did it, actually. He appeared in a sitcom recently, apparently.
Did
so
he?
My mum told me.
We'll have to talk about that later. But certainly, I think, you do... I think the lines today between professions, or famous professions, are far more blurred, and certainly more transgressible, is that a word? You can cross over from a sportsman into an actor, and people wouldn't consider it to be too strange. Mm. Whereas I think this was something that was unheard of practically at the time. For what it's worth, I don't think Freddie Truman's performance is particularly good in the test, which is probably a bit of a travesty of a statement.
Well, it's guest star territory, isn't it?
Well, big time.
Freddie
yes.
Flintoff was the cricketer I was trying to think of a modern day. If Freddie Flintoff was in a sitcom now, I'm sure he'd probably be as equally uncomfortable.
I think perhaps Phil Tuffnell, basically is a celebrity who used to hang around on the cricket field. But I think, you know, it works as well as it needs to work for this particular episode.
Yeah.
But not only have you got the actor kind of, sorry, not only have you got the cricketer kind of masquerading as the actor, the character himself is masquerading as an ARP warden, because clearly this is all part of Hodgie's ploy to humiliate Mannerin. And that's something else that's fairly unique about this episode, and that's the whole plot is based on the warden trying to set up Mannerin to make him look silly.
Yeah.
And that's it entirely. That is the absolute premise of this, this premise. Yeah, the...
we've got a lot of costume stuff
that yeah.
we're overlooking here. John Lemessurier obviously looks fantastic. I mean, that's a good thing about this plot and the setup is you'd never have to wear a jacket like that, but they've really gone to town. What everyone else has on their tie.
Would you not? I think that blazer that Wilson's wearing is a blazer for a cricket club.
Mm.
So he wouldn't wear it on the field, does he point out to Mannerin?
I see, right, okay. Well, I mean, perhaps the scenario. and Pike looking ridiculous in his...
yes.
I used to have a Ghostbusters hat like that when I was a kid.
Oh,
every time I see this episode, I think of that little Ghostbusters cap I had.
Wow.
Where it's sort of... it's like a plastic, that cap on the front.
You see the black balls in the back, you know? Again, it's something that's fairly staple item. It makes many, many reappearances throughout the history of Dad's Army. Usually far more prominently when they're doing manoeuvres and they're doing plans.
Yeah.
But they've just brought the black balls in on set, and again, presumably that would have been a feature in a cricket's dressing room. I don't know. Would you play in moves in the same way that you were playing it on a black ball for football, for instance? Because you know where you're going to be, don't you, on the field?
Yeah, this is it. I mean, I suppose... I mean, it's all a little bit of stuff that I'm sure equally as well researched as everything in Dan's army.
Well, yes, I agree, and especially when you've got some individuals who are as enthusiastic about cricket as Jimmy Perry and Bill Pertwee. Now, we must talk about Don Estelle.
Absolutely, I was just going to say, I don't know if this is Don's first episode, but he...
Oh, it may well be. He was in Big Guns, and he was in Don't Forget the Diver. I think those were the three episodes that he was in.
Right.
And again, you're better on chronology than I am.
No, Don't Forget the Diver was earlier than this, so no, it's not his first episode.
Mm.
Look at Frank and Teddy Bear, looking fantastic. And I mean, I suppose you were talking about the Britishness of cricket, and I suppose getting everyone, all the characters in, is a good, everyone in Warrington coming more or less coming together for this cricket.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's kind of an event. But in terms of locations, that's actually on Spencer, and I've been there.
Wow. Okay.
So that only a couple of years ago, actually, as well, and it actually looks very similar today to how it looks on screen looking at it now. But you've not been to Stanza, have you?
No, I've not.
It's something you're going to have to do at some point, because there are so many locations that are usually off-limits. Because it has been continually owned by the Ministry of Defence, so much of it hasn't changed.
Wow.
Because all they use it for is blowing big holes in the ground.
Yeah.
So occasionally you get a new crater, but the rest of it is the same. And when you go around with someone, as I did, from the Appreciation Society, they know precisely where to go. And it's just an amazing experience.
It must be fantastic to be... I mean, you know, when I did Dan's Army and Beyond, we wanted to go to Stanza, but they were having lots of explosions going off the weekend we were filming with Frank. But it is pretty special to stand somewhere where all these great men and crew have been, you know, over the year. So this is a good episode of the Bill. The Shelf is he's a good bowler and a good batsman.
Well, again, Pertwee was an enthusiastic cricketer. He played cricket too,
right?
And so perhaps this is. I mean, I think today, if you're looking at this in a particularly critical light, you could say it's a fairly self-indulgent episode as well. So I've just seen something in the background behind Mannering. You've got a building.
Oh, yeah, I spot, yeah.
That building are the stables from Command's Decision.
Wow, all right.
And they're still standing.
Cool.
They're still standing. Captain Square, if you remember, comes out of those stables on a horse.
Yes.
And
yeah.
that is the same location. It's literally just down the road from Command's Decision. You know, I'm very uninformative, usually, where it comes to locations, but I've actually been to this one. So.
Wow.
But and less than half a mile from here is where they recorded the closing title sequence through
right.
The copse of trees. So.
Cricket in television shows is an interesting thing, because I mean, two I'm aware of. One, because this one was repeated only last week. Inspector Morse actually did a cricketing episode, and again, as you said about this being self-indulgent, Kevin Whateley had mentioned he, if he'd not been an actor, would have loved to have been a cricketer. And so they wrote a storyline where he had to play cricket and Morse was in the audience. And they were watching all the suspects were on the field playing cricket. And similarly, in Doctor Who, it was a very indulgent episode where Peter Davison gets to play cricket for 5-10 minutes with very little to do with the plot.
Indeed.
I think out of those three things I'm talking about, this is probably the best example of getting it right, because it is actually funny. You know, Jones are whacking down the stumps for no real reason.
So what part do you think is funny?
Jones.
I think that is appalling, and I think you and I have discussed this before too, because people have sent in emails when I've mentioned this or I've referred to this in the past. I think Jones jumping around like a gorilla behind the stumps is the absolute height of indignity for the character.
Yeah.
It's not funny. It portrays him as an idiot. And they do the same joke over about 7 times. How was this? How was that? And even the cast looked bored.
Well, I mean, as a child, I'm not a sportsman, as you probably gathered, listeners, and when I was a child, my dad said, I will give you £10 every time you score a goal when you play for your local Cubs football team. And I never scored a goal. And I actually used to stand by the opposition's goal because I didn't understand the offside rule. And that was for a whole season.
Yeah.
So I can quite understand Joe's not being good at cricket and not understanding it. I relate to that because I think, well, that's exactly, you know, you must make sure he's out of his crease, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I can quite relate to Jones here. So I find that funny. But I mean, also, I mean, because even though, I mean, we're going to discuss this on the Jones Spectacular episode at some point, but even though sometimes the writing wasn't very consistent with Jones, Clive Dunn's performance was always wonderful.
Oh, yes.
And he put in so much energy, and he really, really knocked those stumps out. Oh, this is great. It was never going to happen, was it?
Well,
he was never going to catch that ball.
You'd have thought, I mean, you think about Arnold Ridley, though, you know, they take him out to stand to in the middle of nowhere on a fairly regular basis, and then they chuck cricket balls.
Absolutely.
You know, you can actually see the stables there much clearer.
Yeah.
So, in fact, that's actually not a stable. That's another building that isn't there any longer. And of course, Mr. Blewitts.
Yeah, good old Harold. Harold
Bennett. Yeah, quite right. Yeah, he's one of my favourite peripheral characters.
Yeah, he's great fun.
I absolutely adore his performances. They're so natural, and they completely floor Mannerin's character whenever he insults him.
Yeah,
and he does it with Hodges actually as well in another episode too.
Oh, Time on My Hands.
No, it's not that one, actually. It's Wake Up Warmington, where they join forces. Hodges and the platoon join forces.
Oh, yeah.
And he takes the mickey out of him because Hodges tries to prevent Blewitt from using his stirrup cup.
Right.
And he does an impression of him.
Ah.
Or something. Anyway, we're digressing once again. But, I mean, we talked about the costumes already somewhat, but my question would be, do they really use hats like that, or did they really use cricket hats like that on the films?
I'm not sure. I mean,
they look like targets.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I like that little moment between Mannering and Walker then, where he said, you know, oh, what is it, £2 for the other ball? He said, no, I have it on me. You know, it's a nice little thing. We're all on the same side here, literally.
Well, it is, but it's Mannering participating in a fraud, which is most unlike him, in a very gentlemanly way, because he wants to still pay for the ball.
Yeah,
but he's paying for the ball in order to cheat.
Yes, yeah,
because
exactly.
Winning means so much to him, to get one over on Hodges.
And a nice little musical montage here. And John Laurie going all out for it.
I don't think he's a very good cricketer or bowler, John Laurie. That was a chuck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and you've got Ian Lavender having to play the majority of the location scenes on in this episode in trousers that are considerably larger than they should be. There's a lot of music used in this episode as well, and again, I think when we were talking about recording this commentary, we were saying there's a lot of action, if you like, a lot of action without any words or any dialogue.
Yes.
So it should be easy for us to go off the tangent.
What's the radio version like?
Well, it's not so visual.
Yeah. Hey.
So, but it's done. If you look at the episodes that they didn't adapt, there's usually a very good reason as to why they didn't adapt. And this is one that I am always surprised that they did actually have a go. It's about 2 or 3 minutes shorter than the average radio version. But in all honesty, it's not particularly different. There's a couple of additional scenes that have been written by Harold Snowden and Michael Knowles, but very small scenes, really. They still managed to stick fairly true to the TV episode, far far closer actually than they to this one than they do on some others.
Yeah, I suppose writing a match in a script, you know, you've got bat, like here, we've had one side bat, and now we've had a little interval, and now we've got the other side bat. In terms of actually plotting it, because we had the opening scene in the courtyard, and then we had them practicing, and then it's straight in on, you know, into the cricket changing rooms and onto the field. So really, there's only about six separate scenes, even though the scenes are quite long in this episode.
Hmm.
So that's quite, you know, not many really. I mean, I know that these location scenes are long, and I suppose if they've had such a large amount of location... Oh, this is funny when he walks all the way back.
Is that professional? Freddie Truman, is his jumper a bit too big for him, do you think?
I don't know. I mean,
well,
you
have a look when he gets closer.
I suppose, yeah, the line... His, yeah, 95 miles an hour.
Is that fast for a bowl? We'll never clue, to be honest with you, but... I do think
it'd be fun.
It's quite fun because
if a car was coming at you, I think it'd be quite
involved. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I still don't think Arthur Lowe reacts as quick as he ought to have done.
No, although, you know, I mean, Arthur must have been, what, 50 when he was doing this?
Oh, goodness, I'm terrible at ages or whatever. But, of course, this is Hodge's plan all going horrifically wrong.
Yeah.
And Mannerin sniffs the opportunity of getting one up on Hodges here. But I think it's actually an episode that features Mr. Pertwee more than I remembered. And I know I said earlier that it's his scheme that's at the base of this episode.
Yeah. Now you've said that, I've just thought of another episode featuring the sport.
Oh,
yeah. In particular Mr. Pertwee, when they're playing darts.
Oh, yes.
And it's the Home Guard versus the Warden. And the same there, where at that time, there were far more, like, there, I think, a couple of extras to play the Wardens, and you had about 10, 11.
That's right.
And it's the same here. I think we've seen two guys in the background to play the Wardens.
Well, there was the chap who just bowled as well, to Mannerin, after Egan injured his arm. I've no idea who he was. He was probably a cameraman or something.
Yeah,
but you mentioned the darts.
Oh, this is. Oh, sorry to interrupt. I love this little in England over the top. It's my favourite song. An actual. Oh, that's brilliant. But it's my favourite song. I still think that song's just brilliant even now.
I think it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, you think about it, you've got English Country Garden, you've got Always Be in England, and again, there's a lot of music in this one, and been quite easy to pick the music, I would have thought, as well, given the kind of ambience they're trying to achieve with this episode. But you mentioned darts earlier, and I can't let you get away with it.
Which episode was that?
just sing whilst you think.
I can't. I'm rubbish with the titles.
You're getting better. You are getting better. You got better for the beat last time.
I did.
It's Have Some Friends.
That's it.
Yeah, which is another exceptionally good episode, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can think of any episodes, listeners, that we haven't mentioned that feature sports as part of the plot, then by all means, feel free to drop us an email.
Please do let us know. And there'll always be in England. I wonder how many times that was used up the series. I know this wasn't the only occasion, but it's the most prolific occasion, really.
I honestly can't remember. Music of Dad's Army is not something that I am particularly knowledgeable about, or I have to say, that interested in. I like listening to it in the context of the programme, but would I take it out of the programme, put it on an MP3 player?
No.
And of course, this is the final part of the story, really, where everyone, you look at the cast's face there, everyone's assuming that they've lost because poor old Godfrey's got to go in. And again, this is actually a bit of continuity. He's playing just before or after this episode?
It's before, I'm pretty sure. I think it's series three.
Okay, well, within Branded, yes, I think you're right, yeah. Within Branded, it was established that Godfrey is an incredibly meek and modest character.
Yeah.
And at no point did he say, I'm actually an exceptionally good cricketer.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's just... he chops his back. I just think it's...
Whoops, an engine there.
Really good evidence that the character of Godfrey is is continually underestimated.
Absolutely. He's the best character they could have saved for this finale.
Or for the last man.
I've
got to say, Arnold Ridley acts his socks off there. He really puts everything into
yeah.
it. And I like the episodes where Godfrey saves the day because he is quite he's an unexpected hero.
Yeah, yeah.
And look, there you are, all going back.
That's lovely.
But,
you didn't really win. I should never have declared.
And Hodges, of course, is not a particularly gracious loser.
No.
But I don't think Mannering would be either.
Oh, certainly not.
And again, I think I've said in the past, possibly controversially, that Mannering and Hodges share a lot of the same traits.
Oh, attributes, absolutely, very much so.
And I wish to goodness they'd have actually come up with a storyline at some point that would have removed Mannering from commanding the platoon and installed Hodges instead, because I think he may have done it slightly better.
I'd have loved an episode with Hodges and Mannering having to like share a hotel room or something, or a train carriage, or be locked in a cell
yeah.
with just the two of them. That could have been nice.
Brilliant, good, a bit of a character piece or
yeah.
something there. But of course, you know, with an ensemble cast of this calibre,
yeah.
you can't
have
two characters,
no.
and it's just not going to happen. But certainly, just the final thing for this particular episode is the credits roll. Another very poignant ending. The only wartime reference, really, the air raid signal being sounded at the end.
Yeah.
And everyone again looking up in the sky saying, you know.
It's one of my favourite things about that. As I've said in previous podcasts, I love the idea of how real the characters are, but you feel they have got a life outside of when we see them on the screen. They are going to their butchers, or they are going to the bank, and here they're going off to get into their uniforms to probably charge like this through, into
yeah.
Wilmington town centre.
No, absolutely. And I just like it because it achieves that sense of reality that you just described, and also grounds it in the war again for an episode that, quite honestly, where the war was quite incidental on that occasion.
Yeah.
So, aside from the characters. Anyway, that half an hour went exceptionally quickly, I have to say.
It certainly did.
I do enjoy some of these episodes because normally I wouldn't enjoy the test. It's not one of my favourite episodes. I enjoy them considerably more when I sit there and talk all the way through it. So,
yeah.
Thank you for assisting me in my enjoyment there, Oliver.
Oh, it's all right. We're looking forward to getting your feedback, everyone, to tell us what we got wrong about cricket and you
yeah.
know, any other sporting references. Any references at all that you'd like to send in to us, please do to the usual addresses. It's James@dadsarmypodcast.com or Oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We've got twitter.com/dadsarmypodcast or twitter.com/Oliver Crocker. You notice how James always goes quiet at these moments? It's because he normally has to have them on a piece of paper. He goes and hides.
I'm also in control of the recording over the other side of the room. Anyway, say goodbye, Oliver.
Bye-bye, everyone. Thanks
Bye.
For joining us.
Bye for now.